So often when people in small organizations think about fundraising, they think about the ask. In fact, they get so fixated on the ask and asking for money that they actually forget that that's only a small part of what fundraising is. So today on the podcast, we are going to talk about what happens in between the ask, and that can actually have a bigger impact on your fundraising success than however you do the ask itself. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and you're listening to the Small Nonprofit Podcast, where we bring you practical, down-to-earth advice on how to get more done for your small nonprofit. You are going to change the world, and we are here to help. So today's guest is my friend Mike Dirksen, and Mike is the founder of Build Good, and if you like podcasts, which you do because you're listening to this one, he's the host of Build Good Fundraising Podcast. I highly recommend, and he's joining me from the Canadian Prairies. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Cindy. It's good to be on here. We've had you on the podcast, and I always just love spending time with you, so I'll take any chance I get to hang out with you.
I know. Just as a total aside, I feel so lucky to be able to have these conversations. I feel like the podcast has allowed me to make all these cool sector friends across the world. So it's really fun because otherwise you're so far away.
Yeah.
Nobody
really comes to Winnipeg. Let's just be honest. So the fundraising world in Canada, at least.
Yeah.
Oftentimes revolves around Toronto, which is fair. Like most shops are over there.
That is so true.
Yeah.
If you're in Canada, I mean, everyone hates us for it, Toronto, but it is what it is. But yeah, one day I'm going to come out there. Let's dive in, because first I want you to tell us a little bit. You actually you run fundraising campaigns for organizations, and you do long-term consistent work to help them grow their fundraising. So before we go into the in-between asks, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you've come to think about these things.
Yeah, so I was a practitioner for a long time, working in both individual giving, but also in major gift giving. And our point of view and the reason why we sort of started Build Good is that so much of fundraising success comes from the strength of your relationship with your donors. That's number one. And number two is the quality of your business decisions. And oftentimes what ends up happening is that the in-house team that we build is very much focused on marketing and donor comms, and those are really important things. But the most meaningful thing we can do in-house that we cannot outsource is relationships.
Mm.
And so we founded Build Good out of this belief that, hey, let us take care of the donor cycle, the yearly sort of donor cycle with campaigns and newsletters and direct mail and emails and landing pages, all of that stuff that requires technical players that know all of those things really well. Let us take care of that. And then you in-house, you hire relationship players that build meaningful human connections with your donors. And that is a better use of your time. And so that's sort of our model. So we come in, we plug in what we call the fundraising flywheel. We help you implement it. And then the fundraiser in-house has all the time back that they can spend on calling donors, meeting with them, building meaningful moments and experiences and donor sort of interactions and friendships.
Amazing. Okay, so when you and I were talking offline, you mentioned the flywheel. And I was like, what's a flywheel? So for our audience who's kind of like me and doesn't know anything about, I'm going to assume cars, but even that, I can't be confident. Let's talk about what a flywheel is. When you explained it to me, it made so much sense as an analogy for the fundraising cycle. So tell us, what is a flywheel and why does that work?
Yeah, so I'll start with a bit of a personal story. I grew up in South America in a very rural sort of setting where if you wanted electricity or running water or anything like that, it was a lot of creative approaches. So a lot of stuff ran on diesel generators. And a diesel generator is a big diesel engine that that you start, and then it starts running, and then you can power a water pump off of it, or you can generate electricity off of it. And a diesel generator has a big flywheel at the end, which is a big metal plate. And so as the engine gets going, it's pretty slow, but then once it starts spinning, it gains momentum. And what the flywheel at the end of the engine does is it makes sure that the engine can use less effort to stay in motion, because this big, heavy flywheel now has momentum and it's just going. So another way to think about this is if you walked up to a big, giant steel plate that you could turn, and somebody asked you, hey, get this big plate spinning, like it's on an axle, get it spinning. You're going to put a lot of effort into just getting like a little inch out of it. And then you're going to put a lot of effort in again, but it's going to be a little bit easier because it's got a tiny bit of momentum. And you're going to put a lot of effort into the third time. All of a sudden, you're going to have a breakthrough where that wheel is slowly spinning on its own. And the same amount of effort that you put in at the beginning is going to make it go faster and faster and faster. And once it is spinning, it requires very little effort to keep it in motion, because it's got all this momentum. And on the flip side of that is if you stop applying any pressure, if you turn off the diesel generator, it is still going to run for a little while because it's got all this momentum. And then it will come to a sudden stop. And so there's a lot of fundraising analogies here that we get into with the flywheel, both in how to get it going, how to keep it going, and what happens if you take pressure off of it. Because for a while, you're going to have a fake sense of confidence that things are still running, because they still are. And then it comes to a sudden stop and you're wondering what happened. Well, 18 months ago, you stopped doing this.
I literally cannot think of a better analogy. That is exactly how I envision a really strong fundraising program for small organization working, which is, you know, it is hard at the beginning. And so many people give up early on. Yeah. They think, I've tried this one time, I maybe got a little bit of money, but like, it's not working, especially when it comes to individual giving. But this is a long game. Yeah. And we're going to dive in because it's brilliant. It's such a perfect analogy. And it reminds me of, there's like a little wheel at the local park near us where the kids sometimes play. They've kind of outgrown it, but it's the same idea. Like, they want to sit down and then they want you to push them and get them started. And it's like, oh my God, my back is going to break because I'm getting old. And like all the momentum you need to get that thing started. But once it's moving, then you just tap it and it kind of just keeps spinning until they fall off, of course. Yeah. But yeah, let's dive in, because I see so many organizations get stuck at that early stage where they just think, this is not going to work for me, let's stop. It's too much work. So what happens in the beginning? Tell us about the getting it going stage.
Yeah. And before I do, just a bit of a warning, the getting going is slow. It is a little messy. It's going to feel a little bit discouraging.
Such a great analogy. It's not easy.
Yeah. It's not easy. Yeah.
Difficult work, but it's patience, right?
Yeah, it's patience. And if the flywheel doesn't make sense for you, just think about the power of compounding sort of progress. Like, just think about your RSP account. When you started with $50, it felt like it was useless to put $50 in there a month. Well, in 50 years, you're sure going to be glad you've been putting in money every week, because it will have compounded, right? So the first, there's sort of five parts to the flywheel. And asking is only one of them. It's a very small amount of the whole thing. But the first part is just listen. And what we mean by listening is to gather both qualitative and quantitative data. It's easy to do one or the other. And they're both very important. And on their own, they give you a low resolution image. But you put them together and things become into focus a little bit. So you can listen to donors in two ways. You can listen to what they're telling you through their actions. And that is looking at your data, right? Just look at your donor file, look at your data, see what donors have responded to, what they haven't responded to, how many donors are sticking around, how many new donors are sticking around. We can get into so many different things that you should be you could be looking at here. And there's many great resources, including people you've had on your podcast who have talked about what to look for in your data. Mm-hmm. But that's one. Number two is the big one, which I think a lot of nonprofits miss, is the qualitative data. And qualitative data is actually talking to your donors. Mm-hmm. And this comes with a bit of a caveat, because here's sometimes what happens. You had an event and a board member at the next board meeting says, well, my aunt came and she didn't like this, or my spouse thought that this wasn't done very well. And then we go like, oh no, that's what donors are telling us. Well, no, that is what one donor is telling you. Mm-hmm. And so there is a difference between listening to donors and listening to just one or two donors. That's the important bit. So you want to talk to as many donors as possible, and you kind of want to have a set of questions you're going to ask them so that you've got a bit of consistency. Mm-hmm. And go ahead, Cindy.
Oh no, let's talk about what your favorite questions are. Cause like, I literally, this is my absolute, I call it my secret sauce to fundraising success. Mm-hmm. Is listening to your donors, having conversations, getting to know them. I always say, like, curiosity. You need some starting questions, and then you just get curious and you connect with people. But I would love to know what some of your favorite, call them like spark questions or starter questions are.
Sure. I'll start with which questions are not good questions to ask, because those are the ones we often ask. We ask things like, hey, do you want to receive mail or not?
Oh,
do you want to receive emails or not? Do you care about this thing or do you care about that thing? Those are not great questions to ask, because they don't actually get at the thing that you want to find out. You want to find out why your donors care about your cause. You can figure out what the best way is to connect their passion to revenue. Mm-hmm. And that comes through looking at the data.
That's the hard data. That's like, that, you know, your open rates, your click-through rates. You can see donor behavior, especially, I think I had Tim from Neon One on the podcast a while ago. And we were saying, like, people's stated preferences don't align with their actual behavior. So they might say, yeah, I only want to hear from you once a month, but you might get your best email engagement if you send weekly. Like, people actually aren't aware of their behavior around preferences. So go to your hard data, look at that when it comes to how many times should I send emails and when and all that.
Yeah.
So then on the flip side, we want to know, as you said, why they care. How do we find that out?
Yeah, you can ask them why did you make a gift? I'm curious. Most people don't make a gift. Donors are unusual people. Most people don't give to charity. So if you walk into that mindset with, this is an unusual person. So that in itself should make you very curious. It should also make you very grateful to have the opportunity to talk to them. So if you just lead with that mindset, you can straight up ask somebody why they decided to make a gift. And from there on, you just ask open-ended questions, right? Don't ask closed-ended questions that can be answered with yes or no. You can say, oh, tell me a little bit more about that. You can ask why five times. That's a classic technique. They say something, you just reframe it as a why. Well, that's super interesting. Why do you think that? Or why did you say that? Or why do you think you felt this way? The important thing is you want to log all these answers carefully. Mm-hmm. So ask permission to record. That's going to do a few things for you. One is later you can get it transcribed. And you can do a little bit of sentiment analysis to see if there's any sort of commonalities between the answers. But B, if you ask them to record it, you can later go ask them, can we use this for a newsletter? Can we use it for an email? Can we use it for a video for social? Can we use this to encourage other people to be more generous? Like, you should really be thinking of this research that you're going to do to have multiple use cases down the line, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like want to underscore everything you said, because it's like, I love it. You're just like, every piece, every word out of your mouth is so intentional and helpful. And also you're just so nice and like calm about it. I'm just like, this is golden. So for everyone listening, like, go back and listen to what Mike just said. I can't understate enough how valuable that is. So we're going to find out why our donors care. We're going to take that information. We're going to use it in multiple ways, but also when it comes to figuring out the rest of the flywheel, right?
Yeah, because listening to your donors is going to give you, so the qualitative data, the answers, to be clear, that's messy data. It is messy data. You're going to get a lot of different answers. And so you need to be careful not to sort of weigh one over the other. Mm. What you're going to do with that is you're going to create a hypothesis, essentially. You're going to say, you know, I think this is what most people care about. It seems like there's something here. There's an insight here. There's a nugget here. A lot of people talked about this. So clearly they're thinking about us this way. So we must be positioned this way, at least in their, you know, in their perception of us.
Mm.
Then you're going to run the flywheel. And when you listen again to the data, that's going to tell you whether you are right or wrong, right? It doesn't have to be complicated. Like, it really doesn't have to be complicated. For one client, a lot of donors just identified with the fact that values that were important to them were hard work, because they came from a generation of immigrants, and the reason they were tied to this organization was because of that history, right? Now, that's a little bit of insight, because now when you're talking about the beneficiaries, you can talk about the beneficiaries in a way that makes them look like, hey, they're hardworking. They actually want the best for their families. They just need a bit of help. Mm-hmm. Now that resonates a lot more with donors. It's the reason they got involved with the organization in the first place.
I love it. So we're listening.
Yeah.
We get a better understanding. And that's such a great example of like the new, again, I think we think of data as like numbers and stats, but I call what you just described, I call it kind of like parroting. So like, if you think of a parrot that repeats things back, you're listening for the words and the language that is still true and authentic to your organization, but you're going to parrot it back in communications with your donors so that it reinforces that alignment and the fit. So we start to listen, we understand, we're getting good insights around why people give and the language they use that triggers those giving feelings. How do we then leverage that? What's the next sort of step or phase in the flywheel?
Yeah, the next phase is engage. And again, this is one of those, you're probably doing it sometimes at the same time that you're listening. But I know it's been hard over COVID, and I'm not one to actually push for fundraising special events. That's not necessarily where I can work for some organizations, but part of engaging, you need to nurture some sort of community by engaging with your donors. And that needs to be, you need to gather somehow with your donors. A key tenet of community is communion, and not in the religious sense, but like communing with other people and communing with each other. So you need to create some sort of place or space or way of doing that with your donors.
I just had this conversation with one of our consultants. Because now that things are opening up, we said, okay, like have an open house, you know, get people in the building. We haven't had that it doesn't have to be a big fancy event. You barely need to serve any food. You just want to invite people to connect. And so I think, and especially now, but I want to talk, okay, I want you to talk a little bit more about communion and community. And because I feel like there's in-person, but there's also some virtual ways, right?
Yeah, there are virtual ways. And I think you should try to do both. If you're a local organization, you should absolutely be doing open houses. It is such a low lift for you because like you said, it doesn't have to be fancy. But we're always trying to shrink the gap between the person who wants to help and the person they want to help. We're always trying to shrink that gap, right? And our staff who work on site, they feel like they're an important part of the team because they are on site. And if donors are an important part of the team, we should try to get them on site. There is something to the local connection. So if you're a local shop, you should absolutely be trying to have open houses. I mean, Greenpeace did this really well. I think it was in the UK. I could be wrong. But like they had the boats, the life rafts that they used to like attack whale ships and like protest, they had them hanging on the wall and they were still wet because they had just come off the water. And then they invited donors for this event. Now you see a wet dinghy hanging from the wall, and you know what happened half an hour ago, and Greenpeace, you care about Greenpeace in the first place, you're all in. You're bought in. Like, that's an experience.
This is now. This is happening. Oh, my goodness. I love that. And yeah, there's so many. And I've done this. I've worked with also, I used to work at a women's shelter where we didn't allow people to come into the building, you know, obviously safety and security and privacy. But once a year, we would have a donor who would fund like a night out for all the women and children who lived at the shelter. And we would have an open house in the public common areas. No one's going peeking in people's bedrooms, but it just made, you can do this. I just want to underscore that, because you can still do these kinds of things without jeopardizing the safety and security and confidentiality of the people you work with, if you're working with people. I know that comes up a lot. So like, you don't have to jeopardize your values and your mission, but there are lots of different ways you can connect people to the day-to-day of what you're doing. And again, that's if you're local, but let's talk about some examples of things that you've seen done virtually, because that's also really cool.
I want to talk virtual, but I've got the story. I used to work at a homeless shelter, Cindy. We had an open house. We invited people to the third floor to have lunch. And the actual lunch was happening on the main floor. And we got this call from these two lovely elderly ladies later. They just had a great time. They were so thankful. And I'm like, you weren't there though. So I like probe a little bit more. They just walked into like the dining room off the street, and they just had a meal with the folks there, and they thought that was the open house, and they just thought it was lovely, and they were just calling the
I love thing. That I can so picture that too, because I've done some work with an organization that did lunch meals for like drop-in lunch for homeless people or people experiencing homelessness. And yeah, I can see that. You just walk in. That's the whole thing. No barriers. Yeah. Just show up. So
Everyone welcome. So online, there's a few things you can do. I'll give you a few examples of stuff that our clients have done. So one client is an international development organization. So they do work elsewhere. They have offices here, but really you would only be touring cubicles. So no real sense of inviting donors in. But in appeals, we've done, hey, we're building the school. That's what the appeal is for. If you give us your email or your cell phone number, we'll invite you to a live stream of the grand opening. Right? It didn't cost a lot. They hired a local company to set up a camera, and donors could tune in live to the grand opening of the school that they helped build. A little moment that builds a ton of trust, builds some community, a chat room for donors who are watching to talk to each other. That's it. Another good way is to have a quarterly town hall meeting on Zoom. Mm. Yeah. And this is going to serve a bunch of purposes. One is, first, not that many donors tend to show up for these things. And that's okay, because you can send a replay out later. But again, if we're treating donors like they're an important part of the team, CDIS has a quarterly update to your team. Talk about your wins. Talk about your losses. Ask a volunteer to share their story. Ask, depending on your work, you could ask a beneficiary, as long as that's not harmful in any way. You could ask a donor to share their story. Make it a bit of a thing where you're building community. And again, you're recording this, and you have all this great content that you can later drip out in sort of smaller pieces, because part of the way community is fed is also content.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that, because so many organizations get very overwhelmed at like the, you know, oh, I need to do a newsletter. Oh, I need to do these communications, and I need to communicate. And you basically just said, like, you have an hour quarterly session, and you probably, if you do that quarterly, you have a year's worth of content you can share, right? You get people out live, online, great. And you take the recording and you splice it up and use it in lots of different places. It does not, people don't need things to be fancy. They need it to feel authentic. Yep. And going back to what you said about listening, it has to align with, why do they care? So you have that information, now you get to use it. That's such a great example.
Yeah. Once you've done that, you've earned the right to ask. Like, you've listened to people, you've engaged with them. And I think you've earned the right to now move into the ask, which is the next part of the flywheel. And maybe asking isn't just money. Like asking, we always say ask the right people for the right things. Oftentimes we mean like money amounts. But maybe as you've been engaging people, you just see that some people just always say yes. They just show up to everything. Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe the better ask is for them to volunteer or to be on some sort of planning committee or to do something or to invite a lot of friends to something. Or to donate for sure. But like if you think there's a good ask for somebody, it doesn't have to be money. You can ask for other things as well.
And you can ask for all of the things. I think that a lot of people in organizations project their own sort of reluctance on what we can ask people for and to do. And so we think, I can't ask too much, right? I don't want to bother them. I don't want to intrude. But you will have people who support your organization. If it's within their power to do, will never say no to you. Right? Like I've worked with volunteers where they've made annual donations, capital campaign contributions, foundation gifts from their family foundation, helped chair a fundraising committee, hosted events to introduce us to more people, like on join the board, like literally piled up asks.
Yeah.
All within a short period of time. And there was no. If it was in her capacity, she'd say yes. Right. And so very often I think we forget that actually like we're going to, all of the things work together and it builds that connection with the organization. Yeah. And yeah. So asking makes sense. Like go for it.
Go for it. And the great thing is if you are doing the listening bit well, you're not going to be afraid to ask. The people who think that you are over asking, hopefully mm-hmm. they will tell you, and then they shouldn't be getting all the asks. That's okay. Yeah. And a no sometimes isn't a no. It's a not right now, or it's a not a good fit, not at this moment. That doesn't mean it's a no.
Yeah, exactly. So we ask, can we talk for a second? Because I think a lot of times where I see, because I teach a similar content and framework, although I need to borrow the flywheel because I think it's brilliant. Where people I find get stuck is like, they actually don't know how to ask. So often if you don't have experience running a fundraising program, you're thinking, okay, I need like face-to-face because that's what everyone thinks is asking. But can we actually talk a little bit about the mechanics of an ask and how you can take the information you developed in your listening to figure out which of the mechanics or tactics are going to work best for your audience?
Yeah, that's a big question. So broad strokes, donor communications, like sending out letters and emails and texts or whatever, generally speaking, is a bit more of a, maybe arm's length is the wrong language to use, but it is a little bit more one-to-many. However, that doesn't mean it can't be meaningful. And it doesn't mean that for a small shop, that can't be a very large portion of doing the fundraising. If you don't have a major gifts officer on file, if you don't have time to do all the things, then that's a perfectly legitimate way of running a fundraising operation. And then the people who raise their hand and reply either frequently or with a little bit more money, then you pick up the phone and you say, can I have a meeting with you? And you start a one-on-one meaningful relationship with you. I just want to encourage people. Sometimes you say, oh, direct mail isn't meaningful. Emails isn't meaningful. They can still be very meaningful. I've seen $50,000 gifts that were very transactional and not meaningful. And I've seen $50 gifts that were very meaningful and not transactional. Mm-hmm. And just because one was a major gifts officer and one was an elderly fixed income lady writing a check to a direct mail appeal, doesn't mean that the medium is more or less meaningful. So I just want to put that out there. Generally speaking, for small shops, depending on your audience, but usually like email and direct mail and phone calls is a very great way to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you got to start where you are, right? But, and where your audience is. It's that sweet spot of like, what if your audience is 80 years old, you're not doing a QR code on a postcard, right? You're doing traditional direct mail. You have a return envelope, all that kind of stuff. Even if some of them will give online, you still have to meet people where they are. And so the more you listen, the more you get to know those people, even your $50 donors, the more you can understand and make those strategic decisions.
Yeah. And just a point about direct mail. I am not direct mail responsive personally myself.
Same.
I'm a millennial, but you know, I always joke that our company is millennials who mail. Like, we produce a lot of mail. Most of us are millennials, but we're not responsive to it. However, in the listening portion of it, we track carefully people who get email only, who get mail only, and people who get email and mail. It's always kind of a tie between people who get mail only being the most responsive and generous, and people who get email and mail. At least in our client file, I haven't seen people who get email only to be better performing, so to speak. Now, there's other issues that might be there, but for some reason, even just getting the piece of mail still seems to boost response rate a little bit. Yeah. It's still something that people tend to interact with.
Love it. Love it. All right. I want to make sure we get through the rest of the flywheel, because we could talk for days. So we ask, and we've talked about some of the mechanics or tactics around asking. What happens after that?
Yeah. So quickly back to the ask. When we ask, one mechanic I need to make sure we talk about is that you are asking for, you're essentially asking somebody to help you solve a big problem in the world, which is specific. And you're kind of opening a story loop. So this is Aristotle talked about this in Poetics like 330 years before Christ, like, which is a good story is kind of driven forward by a bit of conflict. There's a problem to be solved and you open up this story loop. And then our brains want to close that loop so badly. Mm-hmm. That's why teasers work. That's why movie trailers work. That's why we hit see more on a LinkedIn post that has like, that opens up a story loop in the first line, right? Our brain just can't live with not knowing how that's going to end. So in the ask, we kind of open up a story loop and we say, this is the problem. Here's what we're trying to do about it. The next step is to celebrate. It's thanking, but it's really celebrating the fact that the donor stepped into the story as a character and decided to be part of it, right? Mm. They made a gift. They stepped up to the plate. So now we celebrate their generosity, but more importantly, we celebrate them for who they are, right? Like, this is an identity stuff. Like, this is we're not just going to thank you for what you've done. We're going to thank you for who you are, because fundamentally through your giving, you're trying to become a better version of yourself. And we should acknowledge that.
Can you share 100%. Can you share a couple examples of what that looks like in a thank you letter or a thank you video or however we communicate? Yeah. Because this is something that is a little more nuanced, but actually really important for people to understand and start practice.
A traditional thank you letter might be, "Dear Joan, on behalf of the board of directors of Caring Folks Inc., we're delighted to say that we've received your gift. Thank you for your donation of $500. Please be rest assured we'll be sending out a tax receipt your way at the end of the year. In the meantime, if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out." That's a very typical thank you letter. It's perfunctory. It tells the donor, we've received your gift, which they want to know, by the way, that they received the gift. They don't want this to go to a black hole and not know if you got it or not. It says, thank you for the gift. And it says, you're going to get a tax receipt. So you've whelmed the donor, right? Like, you haven't overwhelmed them in a positive way. You've just like whelmed them, possibly underwhelmed them a little bit, but you've answered the three most important questions that they have.
Yeah.
However, oftentimes you just ask that donor to save a life, or you've just asked that donor to do something like really significant. I mean, imagine if you came upon the scene of an accident and you're the first person there, and this person had an accident and they're like dying, and you call 911 and then you apply pressure to the wound, and then 911 comes and they save this person's life. And then that person's like, I would like to thank the kind person who stopped their car and called 911 and saved my life and applied pressure to my wound. Can I thank them? And the police calls you and they're like, they want to talk to you. They're in the hospital. You go into the room. And then that person says, on behalf of me and my entire family, I want to thank you for having saved my life. If you have any other questions, please feel free to address them to me.
Yeah. As-
no, they would be like, I can't believe like how nice you were to do that. Thank you for being so responsive. Thank you for taking it. Like, thank you for caring.
Yeah.
I know you could have just kept driving because some other people, like, they would be so thankful that you
can't shut them up. They're just going to like go on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And so a thank you or like a celebration of somebody's gift is like, dear Joan, thank you for being you. Like, what a kind and caring thing you've just done. You know, yeah. Like your gift is on its way right now to do this and to do that. And I just can't wait to update you on how your generosity and your compassion and your kind-hearted sort of spirit is actually going to make something meaningful happen for you. You really are what's right with the world. Thank you for being you.
Yeah.
That's a different thank you.
I love that. Yeah. You're generous, not your gift is generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else about thank?
Yeah, do it promptly, do it properly. You can't, some donors will tell you, well, you didn't have to thank me.
Oh, and a lot of them will say that.
Yeah.
Lies. You just say,
I know I didn't have to. I just really wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donors say you don't have to thank me, but they do cite it as one of the reasons why they stopped giving because they felt like their gift didn't make a difference. Nobody thanked them. So yeah, be as enthusiastic and prompt about this as possible. I've seen $70,000 gifts get a letter 2 or 3 months later.
Yikes. Yeah. Yeah. No. And this is kind of a rant, but like most people don't understand that their donors typically, there's like people within their existing databases who have a lot more capacity to give them what they're currently giving. Like every donor, and going back to what you said before about a meaningful gift, like every donation is meaningful. It can be meaningful to the person giving. And so you don't always know what that gift means to them. So treat it as gold. Like, yeah.
And the bonus is it can become more meaningful based on your thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody may have given you, I hate this word, but like a trivial gift, let's say, of $25, right? They came to an event or whatever, 20. But the way you thank them all of a sudden can make that gift a lot more meaningful because the person might all of a sudden go, wait, this is actually this really cool thing I was a part of.
Yeah.
And
especially, those one-off gifts that are like at an event or a big one is like peer-to-peer, right? If someone's giving because a friend asks them, how do you then take that as an opportunity to thank them so that they become more intrigued, more connected to the work?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is probably, I mean, this and the next part of the flywheel is probably where you want to spend a really significant amount of energy on.
Mm-hmm. And prepare it in advance. Before you ask, you should have your thank yous lined up. And okay, this is a tangent, but not really. Like one of the things that I love doing with small organizations is really having that, you talked about the story loop, but like when you're asking for something specific, create a specific and unique donation page for it. So the messaging aligns, and then you have a unique and specific thank you letter that goes with it so that you are following along on that story or narrative. And it's not hard to do. It's like so, so easy to just duplicate a form and change some language. And then also, if you have good systems, not even good systems, basic systems allow you to then track campaign versus like track the results of your campaigns and gives you the data piece that brings us back to the beginning of the flywheel. So we're not back yet to the beginning though. I don't know if you want to add anything or talk about report.
Yeah. So you've opened the story loop with the ask and you say your gift can do this, then you're thanking them and you're saying your gift will go to work to do this now. And then the report back is really important because you're going to show the donor that they made a good decision and you're going to show them that their philanthropy is meaningful because it actually gets to work. and you're going to say, hey, your gift did this, right? Now, the reporting is oftentimes some sort of newsletter, which is good. That's like, you should probably have that in place. But I really want to challenge people to think of reporting as an ad hoc, continuous, in the moment sort of a thing. So again, if donors are an important part of the team, something cool happened at your shop, something important happened, you're updating your team. Just think about, could I update donors on this? Does this make sense beyond staff to also update donors in the moment? So we have a client, they work with youth who are in gangs, essentially, right? And so they have a few sort of community people who live in the community. And every now and again, he'll be like, we're going to call, and he's kind of like sleepy. And he's like, oh, sorry, at 3 a.m., somebody knocked on my door. They had been shot. They didn't want to go to the hospital because they were worried about police, whatever. So I helped him with this. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just send out an email right now. And we'll just call at 3 a.m. and just be like, dear Joan, here's what happened last night at 3 a.m. There was a knock on my door. That's it. That's an ad hoc, in the moment update. 9 sentences, 8 sentences, 3 sentences. But just get it out there. Like, report back to donors on what's happening, because mm-hmm. they are going to feel a massive connection to you, because they now are an important part of the team.
Okay. We have no more time, but this has been like, so this is to me like the biggest lesson in fundraising that anyone can take. Like that flywheel. And as an analogy, I feel like we can wrap up talking about like the patience and the momentum that builds, right? Because it is a wheel. This, you keep going through it, and then it becomes a lot easier to maintain.
It becomes easier to maintain, because at the first time everything is scratch, right?
Yeah.
But you are going to build out systems and processes as you go along. And that's what's going to make this thing easier.
Yeah.
You're also going to get into this cadence of listening, engaging, asking, like celebrating, reporting. You're going to run that maybe 3 or 4 times a year, once a quarter. And once your team has it on the wall and they start using this language, they're even going to be like, wait, this could be a good report back. Wait, this could be a good celebrate thing. This could be a good ask. This could be a good engage thing. It becomes a little bit more institutionalized. It becomes part of the DNA of your team and your organization.
Yeah.
And you're going to resource it with systems and processes that will just make it a lot easier.
Yeah. Now, this podcast is being published January 9th and the beginning of 2023. And already, right now, we're recording in October 2022. There's a lot of people talking about the economy, and there's a lot of fear, similar fear we saw at the beginning of COVID, where everyone wanted to just shut down and not bother people. Let's talk about the moment when we take the pressure off and why we actually need to keep going right now. Because we need the momentum, we need the inertia, even if it's not going to be it could still be your best fundraising year ever, but what happens when we stop?
So when we stop, there is going to be a bit of momentum that keeps going because you've done all this great work. But then slowly, and we saw this from COVID, we saw a client with a $1.5 million file stop everything. And the next year was the best year ever, because income remained the same, but expenses were way down.
Yeah.
So net revenue looked amazing. 3 years in, they're at $400,000 to $500,000. So that really eroded the value of the donor file pretty quickly, right? Now, not all is lost. Those donors are still on file. It just means that they haven't been engaged in a while. But who knows where they could be at? We'll never know. From everything we know, is that if you do this consistently, you're going to achieve predictable fundraising success. And I want to qualify that, because it sounds like woo-woo. Like, what we mean with predictable fundraising success is nobody's going to be able to predict how much money you're going to make, how much money you're going to raise. But if you do this predictably, you're going to raise money.
And I think that's the only prediction we know certainly, is that when we stop asking, you stop raising money.
Yeah.
But if you keep asking, yes, predictably there will be revenue and you will see again that compound effect. And yes, will it maybe dip during some harder financial times? It could, but those people are going to remember you when things get better too. So,
and they're going to remember how you showed up for them. Mm-hmm. Right? Like the people who are showing up for you, if in hard times you show up for them, they're going to remember that. Our clients that had the best success during COVID picked up the phones and just started calling people and said, hey, I know that you might be kind of home alone or like, you know, like, yeah, how you doing? Like, no, just the listen and engage thing.
Yeah.
Just double down on that.
I love it. Mike, we're so out of time. Where can our listeners connect with you?
Best place is to find me on LinkedIn. Look for Mike Dirksen. We also have a small free course, which is 5-minutefundraisingfix.com. And you can type in the number 5 or you can spell it out, 5-minutefundraisingfix.com. And it's a little copywriting course just on how to create fundraising messages.
Thank you so, so much for sharing this wisdom and introducing me to flywheels. I'm going to totally send people your way with that analogy. And of course, to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you next week.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.